This meeting is now being recorded.
There it is. Apologies for the delay. I see that, and thanks to everybody for joining us. I see that, so just to give a brief introduction to what we're doing, there's a fair number of kind of minor and innocuous changes, and then there's the one main thing to talk about, I think, at this one, which is the exception on attorney-client privilege. I haven't received anything in writing back from Mike and Legal, but I see that Samantha is joining us now. So why don't we jump into that first and just have that discussion. Sam, thanks very much for joining us. Do you have something, a response that you wanted to make to the email that was sent out?
Hi, Michael. Yes, this is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. I'm sorry we didn't get anything to you guys in writing before this meeting started, but I think we did. We would like to clarify a little bit where the edits came from in response to the prior version that you had circulated. So as Michael has reported back, he had a call with General Counsel John Jeffrey and myself to discuss some of the ongoing issues relating to three of the recommendations, and I think we're pretty much down to just this one. And so during the conversation on attorney-client privilege, one of the things that we had expressed from the ICANN Legal side was a concern over language that would create a requirement for proactive waivers of attorney-client privilege because of the way that the exception was written. And so during the conversation, as Michael noted, we had a discussion about maybe there could be some guidelines that would kind of give some guidance around when attorney-client privilege would be used to hold back or to not provide information that would be otherwise responsive to a DIDP request. But there are, you know, we weren't sure what that would look like. And so Michael took a really good faith effort in drafting up a recommendation that had some specific examples in it or some specific boundaries through which possibly that DIDP exception around attorney-client privilege could be exercised. And so that included future contemplated or ongoing dispute resolution mechanisms, so including litigation and arbitration, et cetera. And then it also referred to other of the DIDP exceptions. So there are other reasons why there has been and there seems to be a collective understanding that there might be reasons to not disclose information such as security-related issues, hour-related issues, items that were bound to hold as confidential, et cetera. And so when I took back the language to the general counsel and we reviewed it, and we were concerned at that point that that guidelines might not be, or at least the way that guidelines were being considered, weren't really done in a way that allowed for the appropriate amount of discretion in how attorney-client privilege could be used, because it's so laid out an area of proactive waiver and then tied it to other issues that are already okay for, there's already some consensus on not releasing. And so as we really sat down and thought about it, you know, agreeing to that sort of proactive waiver reaches a point where that actually raises questions as to whether or not ICANN's lawyers are abiding by our ethical duties in just engaging on a proactive blanket waiver. And so we tried to present some language back to the group that didn't include guidelines, but included, we were trying to express a sentiment that, you know, we understand that even when items are requested that are, you know, facially subject to attorney-client privilege, that we need to look at them. We need to actually take a look and see if it's appropriate to claim attorney-client privilege over those items and not just provide a blanket response back that says, no, you don't get them. And so we were trying to demonstrate our understanding of, you know, where we're trying to go with the transparency conversation, that it's not just a check the box if a document has attorney-client privilege at the top, but we actually look at it and see if it's necessary to continue maintaining privilege over it. And so that was really the spirit of our response back. I don't know, Michael, if you have other responses to that. You know, as we were thinking about it, we tried to see if we could put on any sort of guidelines, but it was really difficult for us to come up with some that we felt didn't cross that line of a proactive waiver that really started raising some concerns.
Yeah, let me just paste the version of it that you sent back just into the chat, just so that it's on people's screens. So, first of all, I mean, it's great that we've are on the same page on the other two. Just with regard to, I think that my concern with the way that it's phrased currently in the version that you, that's been sent back, I don't think that actually provides any kind of substantive baseline or anything that's really grounded in something that's going to improve practice. And it doesn't even really include a firm codification of what's being done now. I guess when I look at the specific language in the revised version, I don't think that it would work to have that as a recommendation because it doesn't really say anything concrete. All it really says is that ICANN will determine whether material should be withheld or not. And I mean, that's sort of going to happen no matter what. I mean, that's an almost inevitable thing that's going to happen is that they will determine whether material should be withheld or not. So I think that the reason why I tried to categorize it with those particular, in that particular way is to provide firm kinds of guidelines for how it should be applied. And I think that in my email follow-up that I sent, I expressed that if the categories don't quite capture the proper interests or if it's unclear as to how the determination would happen, you know, I think that that could certainly be amended, but I think that if you look at the way that the exception is phrased now, I wouldn't categorize it as a blanket waiver, and I wouldn't even categorize it as an automatic proactive waiver. All that the recommendation really says is it says that there will be a process for the material as opposed to just a consideration. An actual process is going to take place, and that process is going to be based around specific guidelines. So my hope is that we can arrive at some kind of a recommendation that provides for a specific process and specific guidelines, because in the absence of that, I don't really see the utility. Like if I don't really see any impact or any real value to a recommendation if it doesn't include something concrete like that. So I see David's hand is up. So why don't we open it up and have a discussion about this?
Thanks, Michael. It's David McCauley for the record. And I want to thank you and Sam both for trying to bridge this gap. The last time we spoke, I mentioned that I had some sympathy for ICANN's position because based on my previous career was where I was in a corporate legal office and general counsel and I understood the importance of it. It seems to me that in many of the things where there's been a dispute, but a discussion about these transparency standards, ICANN has come back to this group and said, oh, we do that already. And that's been sort of satisfactory. And so my question here would be, maybe there's a middle ground, I don't know, but maybe there's a middle ground that could be seen as somewhat concrete along these lines. And that is, when ICANN claims attorney-client privilege, if the person seeking disclosure is concerned that it's just a knee-jerk reaction and it's not really considered disclosure appropriately, they could say, would you revisit that? Would you take a second look, some way to take a second look? And in any case where there was a second look, ICANN Legal would look at the assertion of privilege, and then before they came back, they would review their decision with the CEO or the chairman of the board, because it's a client's privilege to waive if they wish. Would that possibly be a way forward? That's just a suggestion, recognizing both you and Sam have reasonable positions. Thank you.
Sorry, can you clarify that again? That it would create a process for...
What I was saying, Michael, was maybe there's a middle ground where if ICANN claims attorney-client privilege in the context of a DIDP request, and the person seeking the information is concerned or for whatever reason thinks maybe it's just a knee-jerk reaction on the making that assertion, they could, or we could describe a second request process whereby they come back and say, would you take a second look at that assertion of attorney-client privilege? And when you do take that second look, or when this process provides for a second look, it wouldn't be just ICANN Legal coming back and saying, yes, we continue to, we persist. Maybe that's a good word to use here. But they would have to review their decision with the CEO of the corporate, of ICANN. Thank you.
Yeah, so in terms of having a waiver for ICANN for the privilege, because the waiver is at the discretion of the client, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily see that as a good place for a recommendation, because that's just a legal fact. And in terms of creating an appeals process, I mean, there are appeals processes to the DIDP, which are already existing, and we've looked into creating, I think we looked into creating parallel versions of it, and that ended up that ended up being problematic. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily see the utility of having separate appeals for that. I think that for me, the bottom line is, I think that what we're doing here is to try to provide recommendations for good practice. And I don't think that that means that we should be providing recommendations that rubber stamp an existing practice, or providing recommendations, particularly when people have expressed there's a need for more transparency. And I also don't think that we should be providing recommendations which are so soft and so vague as to essentially be, essentially of not a lot of utility to the process. So this is why I'm trying to find an avenue that will actually nail down a specific process, rather than just essentially leave it as a discretionary decision that ICANN will make based on indeterminate factors. And, Robin in the chat says, I haven't heard argument against recommendations for good practice. I mean, I think that it would be a wasted opportunity if we didn't try to find some avenue to codify the factors and considerations that go into this decision and how it's going to be made. So how about, can I ask, Sam, do you think that there's any scope for providing more specificity to how a determination on applying attorney-client privilege would be made?
I think that one of the issues with this, and this is Sam Reisner for the record, I think that one of the issues with this is that there isn't necessarily a one-size-fits-all process for it, right? So there's So, you know, there are things that you know might be relevant to somewhere where there is a potential threat of litigation or dispute resolution, right? I mean, that's the easy part of the world. But there are so many other things that factor into it that it's hard to say on a proactive standpoint what those would be. I think, you know, one of the things we were trying to say, it is aligned with some of the things I'm hearing, right? I mean, we want to make sure that we are not just in a position where the language of the DIDP says, okay, go ahead and rubber stamp it, right? I think that we've already moved a bit from the language that's currently in the DIDP that says a defined condition for non-disclosure includes anything that's subject to attorney-client privilege, to moving to a place where it says, you know, you actually have to look at it, ICANN. You have to think about this critically. You know, there are certain things that we've done in the past, like we've looked, and I know we've talked about this transparency issue as it relates to other things. You know, there come times where issues have passed to the point where it doesn't make sense to maintain privilege over an issue, or it doesn't make sense to maintain confidentiality over an issue. And we have, you know, released documents that we previously held as privilege based on the passage of time, right? So that's been something that's happened. But in terms of trying to set up guidelines that go beyond, ICANN will actually do something to look at this and not just say, oh, there's an attorney on it, it's privileged. You know, that we want to help show our willingness to take that on. We think that is part of our responsibility. You know, one of the things that we saw in the earlier versions of the recommendations was that there was discussion around ICANN's policymaking activities or the ICANN community policymaking activities and where ICANN's legal advice might fit into that. And, you know, one of the things we've discussed and we discussed with Michael is the fact that there are many places where ICANN already has those conversations, right? We already come in, we already produce advice, we produce general counsel impacts on mission, et cetera. So there's already things that get made public around it. And so I think one of the issues that might help, I think there's kind of a missing part of information here, which is what is the type of information that there's perceived to be a challenge about getting that is also appropriately subject to attorney-client privilege. And if we can look at some examples of that, is there a way to develop some sort of understanding about what different types of practice or the documentation of practice could get to around that? Or would there, you know, are those things that ICANN would need to have some further explanation as to why that information still wouldn't be appropriate for public dissemination? I think we're talking in a lot of generalities around attorney-client privilege, and if we had some specific examples about the types of information other than just saying we want to get to ICANN's attorney-client privilege information, that might be more helpful in moving this forward.
I mean, so that's kind of a challenging thing because, you know, we're not sitting in your office and we don't see the documentation that you have in front of you. So for people that are, you know, because obviously it's subject to privilege. So for people that don't have access to the material to come up with a list of the material that they want that's in that office, I think that's, you know, kind of an impossible ask, which is kind of why. And it also, you're never going to, in terms of a list of specific documentation, you know, obviously, you know, that what's contained will vary from day to day. But I think that fundamentally, and I'll say, look, I have a legal background as well. I fully understand the importance of attorney-client privilege, and I think that what we're really trying to do is to develop recommendations that provide proper protection for it. But I think that the hope is that, you know, we can do a little bit better then leaving it with a line that basically says, look at the material before you apply the exception. I mean, if that's where we're at, you know, God help us. I think that we're not talking about a proactive waiver. We're not talking about any sort of blanket thing. If you look specifically at the language, it is a contextual determination that's going to be made based on the facts that are there. All we're looking for is to build some specificity into the process so that it's not just an entirely discretionary decision, so that there's something that the community can look at and say, if I'm making a request, this is what's being considered, as opposed to this kind of broad determination based on nothing that the community can take as reliable and nothing that a reviewer can take as reliable. Sam, I see your hands up again.
Yes, thanks. So I wasn't necessarily saying we need a list of the documents that you want to get that you think that we have. I get that it's hard to make that judgment. But I think, you know, if this is something that is part of the transparency group's work, that what is the problem statement around attorney-client privilege documents? Are there examples of experiences where people have complained that attorney-client privilege has kept them from getting information that they think that they should get from ICANN? I'm talking about the experiential base that leads to the problem statement. That's one factor. In terms of getting to areas where, you know, you think about what does attorney-client privilege mean? Why do we have attorney-client privilege? Why is it that we might be claiming it, right? So there are things that we look for, and it, you know, as I noted earlier, it includes, you know, potential pending disputes, things that we know about. It could be, you know, highly sensitive items that might not look like there's a dispute on the horizon, but, you know, we receive advice on potential new areas of law or potential new things that we're looking into, that, you know, there are some areas of first impression that come up with ICANN that, you know, we might not know if there's going to be a dispute around it, but you know, we need to have something to guide us in taking our decisions and just, you know, assessing risk elements, et cetera. You know, there are many different places where attorney-client privilege is related to risk profiles for the organization and many other things. And that, so I'm not trying to say that it's impossible to come up with some guidance around that, but I think that using this process to try to come up with a few guidelines, maybe it's premature to have a guidelines conversation. Maybe there's a recommendation coming out of this group to encourage the ATRT3 to review practice under the new DIDP as it's evolved out of the Workstream 2 conversation and see if there are areas for guidelines to be put in based on experiences with the new DIDP. You know, maybe there are ways that we can allow the conversation to keep happening without coming up with a recommendation now that we would look at and say, you know, this actually could be harmful to the organization if we were to take it in this form.
Robin just mentioned in the chat a specific example. I don't have a list of those things in front of me at the moment, but I did have, in the early phases of this, there were people that were coming forward and saying that this was an area of improvement that they have to see. And again, it's in terms of a categorization or a list, I think that when you're talking about the DIGP, the way that it's structured is to provide access to the information that's there, any information that's there, apart from that which is subject to the privilege, to the exceptions or privileges. So in crafting exceptions to the DIDP, I think that that's where we're at the moment is, and that's basically the way that it functions, is you're carving out areas that are not accessible. So this is why finding a list of areas or guidelines or categories that are going to be off limits is where we stand, as opposed to finding categories that are going to be subject to disclosure, because the DIDP creates things to be subject to disclosure other than what's there. So with that being said, I mean, personally, the way that it's been phrased at the moment, in terms of the way that it was revised, saying where material subject to a DIDP request could potentially be withheld under attorney-client privilege, ICANN should review the material to determine whether any parts of the information are appropriate for release, including the scope of potential waiver of the attorney-client privilege. I personally don't see any utility to including that at all, frankly, because I don't think that's going to be any kind of improvement of proper process and of current process, and I don't see that as providing any kind of concrete guideline that would be helpful going forward. Like, I think that we're better off with nothing than with that, frankly. So in terms of where we stand in the process, my hope was that we could have a discussion that aims at improving this categorization, providing something a little clearer and more concrete going forward. That's still my hope. Is there any possibility of that? Because if not, then, you know, people are suggesting pushing it forward. I think that in creating this report, we need to express that concerns were raised about transparency with ICANN Legal. I think that if we're unable to find an acceptable avenue forward, you know, I think that we're going to have difficulty in the group. I think that there's obviously going to be discomfort here pushing something forward that doesn't have buy-in with from ICANN Legal. So if we can't find an avenue to provide a clear and specific recommendation here, then my suggestion would be that we basically mention that we had discussions with ICANN Legal, but were unable to come up with unable to agree on a satisfactory formula for improving transparency there, and that that's something that should be taken forward in ATRT3. Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Sure. Sorry, coming off mute. One of the things that John, General Counsel, you know, he would definitely be open to, if you wanted to have one further conversation about this, you know, he's still willing. I think we're not necessarily far apart. It's really a matter of language and making sure that there's and if we can't agree on appropriate language, that's really the barrier here. So he wanted to make sure that I expressed the issue around, you know, some of the ethical concerns that came up and the fact that it still looked like a proactive waiver, and that we just really had some challenges when we looked back to see if there was more that we could put in. We can think about it a little bit more in terms of process, if there are any other points that we could put in. If you want to have a further conversation with John this week, we can get that set up, and that's, you know, and we'll leave the rest of how the group wants to move forward with the recommendation to the group.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea, and I'd be happy to do that. Just to break in briefly to discuss where we are in terms of the timeline. Bernard, and please do correct me, Bernard, if I'm on any of this, but my understanding from discussing with Bernard was that today is the deadline for submitting it if there's going to be a further consultation. But I think that what Bernard mentioned was that it's tomorrow. But I think that What he also mentioned was that if we're not providing any policy things which are specifically opposed by ICANN Legal, that there may not need for be need for a second public consultation. So in other words, I don't see tomorrow's deadline as being absolutely hard because, in my opinion, because I think that there's essentially two directions that this can go in. Either I have a conversation with John and we come up with a formulation that's good and supported by ICANN Legal and then that gets included, or I have a conversation where we're unable to come to an agreement and that leads to essentially we'll remove the recommendation and essentially include a statement saying that we were unable to come to an agreement and that should be taken forward to the future process. Either way, I don't think we're pushing something forward against resistance from ICANN Legal. So with that being said, I don't think that a second public comment period would be necessary, which gives us a little more wiggle room. If there is any opposition to that from the group, please let me know now. Otherwise, we'll proceed on that basis. Okay. Sam, do you want to go ahead?
Sorry, I just had one question because I think that the test of whether or not there's opposition by ICANN Legal probably isn't the test of how you consider whether or not a document would go for further public comment. I think even if you had recommendations in there that ICANN Legal didn't agree with, or we did agree with, if there were substantial changes from the recommendations from your first report, that might gear towards public comment. You know, some of this, I think, goes to the area of, you know, we in ICANN Legal don't necessarily feel that we're as powerful as maybe some of the community might view that we are. And so I don't think that applying that if ICANN Legal agrees test to, you know, future phases of your work, I surely wouldn't want whether or not we agree with you to be the test that you use on the validity of your work. You might have some really good ideas that we don't agree with, and you don't agree with us on, and I would hate for that to be the reason that those ideas aren't put out for future comment. And then our voice can be one of the voices that are considered as the community views it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to give the wrong impression there. I think that the timeline really plays into the factor here because if we want it to be included in the report, we would need to submit it by tomorrow, which essentially means we would need to get, you know, obviously ICANN Legal doesn't have veto power deciding today, but in order to proceed with something that ICANN Legal was opposed to on this issue specifically, I think that there would be opposition within the group, from what I've heard, to proceeding in the face of that kind of opposition, which is that combined with the timeline, puts us in that kind of a situation with regard to that, specific recommendation. Samantha's just suggested proceeding with the report and bracketing this one recommendation for further updating. I think that basically other than this one, I think that we're good with the rest of it, which is why I wanted to just kind of shoot through the remaining, recommendations, the remaining like minor changes, with the 20 minutes that we have left, in order to ensure that there's no, disagreement with them. And those are generally, these are just minor wordsmithing things to, clear up confusion that was raised. So maybe we can go back to the bigger document that I sent around, the full kind of 20-pager, if that's all right. Great. And we will briefly go through the changes that have been made. And because we've only got 20 minutes, I'm going to ask people to just kind of, I'll just kind of go through them, and people can raise their hand if at any point there's something that looks problematic. So the first small change just says the word right to information was taken out to replace just a discussion of global transparency standards. The next change is down on page 6. Final text of has to have final text of plenary. Right. This is to approve the text other than the thing on attorney-client privilege. So the next small change is at the bottom of page 5, which clarifies that the DIGP should also impose clear information on how ICANN will process requests. Although ICANN develops a document in 2013 on their process for responding to DIGP requests, this information could be further clarified and released in a more user-friendly manner. Yes, Ricardo, it is the same document as was sent around for the last meeting. There were slight updates to those two recommendations, which are not reflected in this specific document, because I missed that, but that's been sent around. And so the document that I sent around just before this meeting was the language that we agreed on for those two. And if there's, so we can look at that again at the end of this. So this change is just to clarify, because in response to the call for more information, ICANN responded saying, well, we put this information out there, and so we're just saying, clarifying that it could be improved a little bit, but we have seen that and would like it to be improved. In terms of the next point, best practice among other access systems is to appoint a dedicated employee and to publicize the identity of this person or persons. So that's just to make sure that the person who is reviewing ICANN publishes the name of the person who's responsible for the DIGP request so that people know the point of contact, which is just standard operating procedure in good systems. There's a couple of footnotes that have been changed. I think there's been no other changes to the document as a whole until we get down to the recommendations. And here we'll just go through how it's been changed. The second recommendation, oh, that's about the documentation rule. That's been changed according not to the document that's in front of you, but to a separate one. We'll look back at that right after here. Recommendation number 4 has been shifted so that it says the DIDP should impose clear guidelines on ICANN for how to process requests, including delegating a specific employee or employees with responsibility to respond in DIGP requests. Recommendation number 5 has been changed to say the DIGP should commit to complying with requesters' reasonable preferences regarding the form in which they wish to receive the information under request. If ICANN either already has that information available in the requested format or can convert it to the requested format relatively easily, to respond to an objection that they didn't want sort of ICANN to have the responsibility of scanning, you know, hundreds of pages of material or whatever, and so that's to ensure that it's not doesn't impose an unreasonable administrative burden. In number 8 has been changed to say that in cases where information subject to request is already publicly available, ICANN staff should direct requesters with as much specificity as possible to where the information may be found. And then again, we clarify it. I'm guessing Bernard's about to tell me to slow down. In other words, if the processing of a DIGP request reveals that the information has already been published, staff should include information about where this information may be found in their response to the requester. So again, that's just to clarify, based on an objection about unreasonable resources, just to make sure that ICANN's not in the business of, you know, consolidating vast amounts of information for the requester, and where the researcher can be doing that themselves. Number 12 was slightly tweaked to say that where an exception is applied to protect the third party, the DIBB should include a mechanism for ICANN staff to contact this third party to assess whether they would consent to the disclosure. So again, that's to clarify that ICANN staff will be the one reaching out and not the requester, because obviously having the requester do it would raise privacy concerns. Number 15 is attorney-client privilege, so we can skip over that. Number 16 is related to one of the three on the list as well. Just double check that. Yes, it is. So we'll skip over that because that's not the final wording there. And then in terms of reporting on ICANN's interactions with governments, it was shifted to all expenditures over $20,000 on an itemized basis should be proactively disclosed both in the U.S. and abroad. And I think that that's it in terms of those recommendations. Maybe we can go back to the document with the three revised ones on it. Okay. So skipping over attorney-client privilege, regarding NDAs and open contracting, it now says, Recommendation 16, wherever possible, ICANN's contracts should either be proactively disclosed or available for request under the DIDP. The DIDP should allow ICANN to withhold them subject to a non-disclosure agreement. However, such agreements should only be entered into where the contracting party satisfies ICANN that it, that's the typo, has a legitimate commercial reason for requesting the NDA, or where information contained therein would be subject to other exceptions within the DIDP, such as, for example, where the contract contains information whose disclosure would be harmful to the security and stability of the Internet. And that includes new language on Recommendation 2, which says the DIDP should include a documentation rule whereby a significant element of the decision-making process take place orally or otherwise without a lasting paper trail. The participants should be required to document the substance of the conversation and included alongside other documentation related to this decision-making process. So I think that that's the revised material, that's the revised wording that we agreed on in the last call. That language for Recommendation 2 and Recommendation 16 is just going to be pasted into those two. And then, other than Recommendation for 15 under attorney-client privilege, that's where we stand now. So I'm going to ask if there are any objections or any to the other recommendations or the document as it currently stands. Going once, going twice. Okay. So in that case, we are good to go with our recommendations other than the one on attorney-client privilege. And we're going to schedule a follow-up conversation for sometime this week with to try to finalize that. And other than that, we're, I think, good to go with these with this report and to send back to plenary. Great. Unless there's any other business, thanks very much for everybody for turning out again. It's been a long process, but I think that there's some really good recommendations and some really great stuff in here. I think that this is a really good baseline for making things better, and I think that the group's done really well, and I really appreciate everybody sticking with us throughout this process. So thanks very much, and I will be sure to send out an email immediately after the conversation with John to update and to provide final steps forward. So unless there's any other business, again, going once or going twice. All right. Thanks very much, everybody. Really appreciate it. And thanks very much for Samantha for joining us again.